Welcome to the Drop-In CEO podcast. I'm Deb Coviello, and as the Drop-In CEO, I drop into businesses and assume the CEO role to enhance the human element and increase the results they achieve. This podcast is about bringing you conversations with expert guests who have achieved their greatest results built on a strong foundation of purpose, values, and elevating people. If you're a business leader, entrepreneur, or even just getting started in business, join us as we build the skills you need to achieve your goals. Hello, and welcome to the Drop-In CEO podcast. My name is Deb Coviello, your host, and I have the pleasure of introducing to you today, Jeffrey Shaw. As a keynote speaker and brand message consultant, Jeffrey Shaw, a renowned former portrait photographer, helps companies stop wasting time trying to satisfy some customers who will never be satisfied and attract only their ideal customers. Like a photographer captures the essence of a person, Jeffrey shows businesses how to make customers feel seen, heard, and understood. When that happens, you attract and retain your ideal customers by learning how to speak their lingo. Jeffrey Shaw is a TEDx speaker, host of Creative Warrior podcast with well over 500 episodes and over a million downloads, and best-selling author of Lingo, Discover Your Ideal Customer's Secret Language, and Make Your Business Irresistible. Jeffrey, welcome to the show.
Well, Deb, thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here with you.
All right. This is going to be an amazing conversation. But for my listeners, to give you a little context, when I transitioned from corporate America, went through a time of reflection, exercise, reading, and binging on podcasts. And Jeffrey came across me, my podcast listening phase, at a time when the insights, the guests, and the conversations he brought to the table were exactly what I needed at a time to say, yes, I can be an entrepreneur. Yes, my creativity is valuable and finding the ideal client. So it was a tremendous inspiration. And again, just want to thank you in advance.
I'm thrilled to hear that. That's so much of life, right? The right thing at the right time. So I'm glad you came across our content at the right time.
Just for our listeners, to give them some context and give a little background on yourself, you've had several amazing careers, both in photography and also in brand consulting and coaching. But I would love for you to maybe give a brief overview of your business journey and tell us about that transition from photographer to brand consultant.
Yeah, it's always the number one question I get asked. But as you know, when we live our lives, we rarely find our own life as interesting, for one. But then also, these transitions are connected dots, and they all make sense eventually to us anyway. But to the other people, they're like, well, how did you go from being a photographer to what you do now? So to me, you know, what holds it all together is really it's the art of seeing people. And as a photographer, it was my job to dig really deep into before I photographed anybody, I had to really understand their essence, right? I had to get a sense for who they are and then just create the environment for their best to come forward. So that was my role as a photographer for 35 years, but it's exactly the same process in what I do as a brand message consultant, where I help businesses. Yes, I get to know the business I'm working with, but really my role is to help them understand their ideal customer better. Like, how can we dive in to understand the essence of their ideal customer and capture that in brand messaging, like a photographer captures something in a portrait? In the end, whatever it is that's put on display, whether it's the portrait or it is the brand message, whatever it is that's put on display that captures the essence of your ideal subject, that then becomes compelling to other people of like mind, right? So to me, the role of photographer to brand message consultant is remarkably similar and yet very different in their actual industries.
You know, I love what you say about that. So often I've heard young professionals say that are thinking of moving into a new role, but they say, but I've never done that. I can't do that. And all of these negative mindsets. But when you really think about those skills that they have, those gifts that they have, to your point, to be seen, to be heard, are absolutely transferable. And you'd be surprised that you really can and will do amazing in a new role.
It's interesting you should say that. And I'm probably going to say something here and now to you that I don't think I've ever said on another podcast, because admittedly comes with a certain amount of shame, right? So the shame of my life, like when I tap into like what I'm ashamed of, is that I have no higher education. I went to high school and I went to a photography trade school for 10 months. When I was getting ready to write my book, Lingo, I was working with, before I hired an editor or anything, I was working with a coach who was really just helping me define my core message for the book. But then also I was preparing for making a pitch to speak at TEDx. And there was a session with her that I honestly, Deb, I just broke down and started crying. And because I felt so ashamed, like, who am I to write a book? I'm not educated. I'm afraid to write this book. Like, you know, I do. And I, even now I will say I have a fair amount of shame of not being educated beyond high school and trade show. What I have learned is that I have so much I can offer into the world of brand messaging. I have so much to offer in my insights as a 35-year entrepreneur that that's often what we have to step into. It's not about the education. I could have had MBAs and everything else and probably never learned the actual skill set that I have and I can offer other people. So does it still cause me moments of shame? Do I hide it? Do I not talk about it? Absolutely. Like I don't think I've ever actually said it publicly. Like I have no education behind high school. I feel like I'm coming out of the closet again. you know, but I'm saying that to you because you just opened it up. And it's because I guess I'm on the other side of it. I'm really proud of what I know. I'm proud of what I've learned. I'm proud of what I can help. So for to those young professionals that are feeling like I've never done that, you know what? Tap into what is it that you know that other people don't. I don't care what the source of the education is, whether it's higher education or it's experience or it's hard knocks of life. You have something to offer if you tap into what you know.
So, Jeffrey, we have 25 or 30 minutes for this conversation, but we could almost stop right here with that wisdom. That was fantastic. I liken that also to, you know, you can teach somebody to paint, but to create a portrait, which is what you refer to, takes that skill, and it really is a deep, deep understanding of the person that you're bringing forward. And I know in my line of work, similarly, you know, I'm a problem solver, engineer. We can be taught to analyze data and listen, but to really, really hear what is said and what is not said and those underlying undertones, only then can you really bring out the issue, the problem, the opportunity that you can solve. Yeah. So, forget about the shame thing. We all have these gifts and we just have to take the time or with a coach to be able to pull those forward.
So I do a fair amount of speaking in HR, which I, when I have an HR keynote, I always joke about. It's like how it's ironic and beautiful to me that I'm speaking before HR professionals as someone who's never had a job and I've never received a paycheck. I've been an entrepreneur since 14 years old. But I was speaking to a gentleman at an event and he was telling me that in his company, they're trying to solve employee engagement problem. And he was asking for my advice on how to solve this employee engagement problem. And I looked at him from my perspective as I look at things. And I said to him, wouldn't it be better to solve the employee engagement problem by understanding who you're hiring in the first place? And this turned this man's world upside down. He may have had an MBA, he may have had a great education, but he didn't have the life experience to look at it from a different perspective, that they're trying to solve employee engagement from within the box, where my principle of attracting ideal customers is very similar to how do companies attract dream employees. Like if you hired the right people in the first place who were aligned with the values and mission of the company, there is no employee engagement problem. They're inherently engaged if they believe in what you believe in. And it's that sort of thing that I've learned to give myself credit for what I know, because I completely changed that man's perspective in one brief conversation because he was trying to solve a problem from inside the box instead of, why don't we instead look at our recruiting processes and hire the right people to begin with?
You know, that strikes a chord with me. And that's a really fantastic story. I also recently had a conversation with somebody about marketing and trying to do business development. And they said, what is your close rate? How do you get them to sign the purchase order? And I said, well, I have about an 80% close rate. And he said, what? That is absolutely amazing. It's normally about 20%. But I actually said, at the end of the day, when I start getting to the point of knowing somebody and talking about the opportunity that we can solve, it's about building that relationship and finding that person that by the time you're done communicating, your head is nodding at the same time, you're completing the other person's conversation because we understand each other. And so closing the deal, to your point, with those ideal clients, actually is quite easy if you just start with the conversation and not the sale.
I actually challenged a company I was working with for them to rename their sales team to calling it the closing team, because I was putting all the pressure on them. I was there to work with their brand messaging. And my goal was, as it is for every company I work with, is if your brand messaging is so accurate and spot on to your ideal customers that they feel like you get them, imagine how much easier it is for the sales team if people who already value what you have to offer are in front of them. Right? Sales teams shouldn't have to be selling, shouldn't be trying to convince anybody. By far, the most tweeted slide from any of my presentations is a quote of mine, which is, it's not your job to prove your value to anyone. It is your job to find the people who already value what you do. So I put all the pressure on brand messaging and marketing as your front line of defense today to attract your ideal customers through messaging that resonates for them. And the rest of the sales process is easy. If you put the right people in front of who wouldn't close at 80 or 90%, if the people before you are already aligned with what you're saying, you're not trying to convince them of anything. If a business has a low close rate of like 20%, it's because they're in the business of trying to convince people and they're only convincing 20%.
Exactly. So we could go on and on about this, but I'd love to switch gears a little bit. And anybody who's listening to this, and I'm sure you'll say something at the end, Jeffrey's book, Lingo, is amazing. There is nugget after nugget about wisdom. And I'd love to bring forward one of those. So one of the things that you say in your book, or it could be one of your talks, is, do we serve our customers or see our customers? And there's so much about servant leadership, and that is obviously something I believe strongly, but do we serve our customers or see our customers? I'd love to have your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think so many businesses try to differentiate themselves with promises of better service. And I'll say right here now for all your listeners, service is not a differentiator. It can't be. I don't care how big the promise is. It's not a differentiator, because with a small degree of effort, your competitor can equal your service, right? Here's how I look at serving. So I'll even pull back from that a little bit, is that to me, I define being an expert in your field as knowing what your ideal customers need that they don't know to ask for. If you're only giving people what they're asking for, you are serving them, right? But serving is limited to the degree that which you're just giving people what they ask for. To really move somebody, to really impact somebody's life, and to really be an expert in your field, it is to know what people need that they don't know to ask for. You know more than them. You're supposed to know more than them in your field. So to me, serving is a moderate bar. To really move people is to make them feel seen. And again, this is coming from my perspective as a photographer, because I was in a very high service business, serving very, very affluent families. From the outside, it was a heavily service business. But the reason I succeeded wasn't because I served them. It was because I saw them. I saw them for who they were. I saw what really mattered to them in their lives. I saw probably the most pivotal thing is that the degree to responsibility to which affluent families are under the pressure of being responsible. When you have money, money is not an excuse. So think about it as a parent of 3, 4, 5 kids. All your kids have to be treated equally. You can't send 4 of your kids to Ivy League schools and send the 5th one to community college, right? So there's an innate level of responsibility when you're affluent. There's an expectation and a responsibility that you're buttoned down, that your house looks a certain way, that you show up in the world a certain way. It's a tremendous amount of responsibility. And they want to deliver. They want to be... You know, I always say I knew what my clients really wanted that they would never ask for is they wanted my help in helping them be the most responsible parent they could be to their kids. I knew that's what they wanted. No one is ever going to think to email me that, right? But because of that, I knew that what I needed to do was make sure that they photographed all their kids at the same ages, make sure that they did everything in a timely manner, make sure they got their holiday cards out on time, make sure those cards were perfect. I helped them show up in the world incredibly together and responsible under the burden of responsibility that they were living. Right? It's not something anybody would ever know to ask for.
You know, but unless you spend time with them and see them in their environment and see it in their eyes or the stress, you truly saw them in their environment, and only could you be able to see the full picture, have empathy, and through who you are, seek to find a solution. In this terms, you know, reminding them that making sure that all their children are photographed in the same well at the equal amounts, so that there's no regrets.
Right. I even know how many photographs are each on display in the house of each of the kids. You know, naturally, older siblings are going to have more photographs on display. But the goal was to even that off as quickly as possible, because you don't want your five-year-old pointing out that there's all photographs of the older brothers and sisters and not as many of him or her. Like, that's crushing to an affluent parent. It really is. It's crushing to them because they're so focused on their family and making sure their kids are treated equally. So it is seeing them. Like I said, I could have just served them and gave them what they wanted, but to truly see people is what causes your clients to be committed to you. I've had some of the same clients for 30 years, right? I'm on to the next generation. And that's what causes that, is that level of actually making them feel seen.
So I'm laughing to myself here because where were you over the years, Jeffrey? Because I have three children and my third child, there are a few pictures of her. So
yeah. I'm the young, I mean, I always joke, but yet it wasn't really so much a joke because I wasn't aware of it consciously, but I'm the youngest of three boys. And to this date, I think I have found just recently a second photograph of my entire childhood. And, you know, it just was my reality, you know, but I didn't think about how much it influenced my choice to become a photographer, but it did make me very sensitive to and have the empathy for the families I served and their kids.
So up until this point, we've had amazing conversation about how we see, how we serve, how we find our ideal customer. But another thing that you bring out in your book that is also, I think, a customer base of yours is you talk about being the freedom fighter for the uncommon entrepreneur. And your podcast is called Creative Warriors. And so I would really love to understand more for our listeners. What more about that? The freedom fighter for the uncommon entrepreneur.
Yeah. I think I just got so tired of all the traditional advice, honestly. And I think that's why I created the show. And I've pivoted a little bit in the show. When I started 5.5 years ago, having been a photographer for so many decades, I was thinking more about creatives in business, but I pivoted along the way for the show to be a show of creative solutions for people in any business. Because what I think the world was really lacking, and I think it's gotten better, but it's still a problem, is that in so many ways, the world of business and the world in general is just so traditional and so geared towards the norm that if you think outside, I mean, again, being a creative kid, you know, any of us that grew up thinking creatively, we were criticized for our lack of focus and how much we moved and how much we changed our ideas. And there was so much criticism for who we are. And then we grow up and we go into business, and everybody in business tells you to pick a niche, to do things this way, to do things that way. And I found, and I still find most business advice really bad. You know, I think the whole idea of niche, I had written a previous book a couple of years before I released Lingo that never got published. And the name of that book was called The New Niche. Some of the principles carried into Lingo. In fact, there is a chapter in Lingo called The New Niche, which was taken from the content of this book. And my idea behind that is that the niche today is no longer, the old niche was pick one thing to do to one audience, right? Which is not only incredibly stifling to so many people today, it's also a bad business model. And a much better definition of niche, I believe, is get to your core message for which there are multiple audiences that are waiting for it, that you can express it in multiple mediums. A quote I use to anchor that is, if you know your core purpose, you can wear 1,000 hats and they'll all hang on one hook. Right? That to me is the new niche. It's not, the new niche is not outside of us as one market, one thing to do. The new niche is within us, that we can get that clarity. There are multiple audiences waiting for us, and there are multiple ways we can express that one core message.
You know, I'm laughing here because I have been within the box, and I've been told you need to be more of a generalist and a strategist because you're in the weeds. And then I get a new boss and they say you need to be more deep and into the weeds so that you can be a subject matter expert. And no matter which way I went, I couldn't satisfy everybody.
Right.
But I got out of the box. I took the time to understand what I truly value in my own beliefs and then to be able to express it in who I want to interact with and serve. And yes, I still am in a niche industry as a starting spot, but all that I do and how do I see and serve customers transcends any industry. So I so agree with what you say. Start with yourself and the inside before looking outside.
100%. And you've chosen different mediums, right? You're podcasting, you're coaching, you're doing other things. So you've chosen different ways to express that core purpose that you know you have in that area of expertise and to multiple audiences in multiple ways. So the new niche is no longer outside of us. It's within us.
Amazing. So one more question before we segue is that, you've had a very successful career. You've been very reflective, pivoted, changed. But, you know, the topic of this podcast is also called the Drop-In CEO, where we, with all of our skills and our insights, come into a situation, a client or an organization, and it could be rapidly changing in chaos or somebody really wants to take a significant leap. And I would love if you have any stories or insights where you went into a situation and it was challenging, but you were able through your skills, bring a client, a situation to a better place.
Wow. It's like my everyday daily occurrence. It's all challenging. So I think what comes to mind is a client that reached out to me a few years ago. I wound up coaching him for a little more than a year. So his name is Ted. And Ted came to me at 55 years old, and his age was important for a reason. I'll tell you in a moment. But Ted had founded a couple of successful companies in his life. And he had most recently, several months before, left his most recent company that he created, which he had been with for 15 years, and was just feeling complete and no longer wanted to participate in the company, so left. But at 55 years old, didn't know where he was going next. And when he contacted me, his exact words were, "I'm 55, but I'm not dead yet." And that really resonated for me so much so that I told him to start a blog under that name, "I'm not dead yet," because I loved what he was saying and I could relate. I am 55 now, but I was a little younger a couple of years ago when he brought this up and totally get it. And I think it's actually who I coach on a one-to-one basis today. I'm very selective. I do a lot of different coaching, but on a one-to-one basis, which is the deepest relationship, I only coach people in some sort of transition because I feel I have a skill set and I have so much empathy for that, what I refer to as the midlife entrepreneur, where we are likely stepping into something more meaningful and purposeful in our life, and yet we don't see ourselves slowing down for 20 years or more. And that was the case with Ted. So, but he had literally a blank slate, came to me with absolutely nothing. Like, I have no idea what to do next, which could either, that can be very paralyzing or it could be a blank canvas. But we had to create something. It was a bit of a dilemma. I'm like, we have to come up with something here. I mean, at some point he was going to want to have some income again. And more than anything, it was, he needed to tap into feeling valuable again because he wasn't dead yet. And what we came up with was, as a business model and built a brand around, was the idea of being a CXO. The X not being for experience, which I know is used sometimes, but X as in fill in the blank, right? So we created a business model for him. I used to call him the Airbnb of C-suite executives. So he was sort of a timeshare C-suite executive. He had a huge depth of experience. So he then became kind of a temporary CEO, a temporary CFO, temporary CMO, a temporary COO, either for companies that had an interim position that they needed filled, or they weren't quite large enough to have a COO on staff, but could bring somebody in project-based. Because what he was clear on is that he only wanted to do project-based work. At 55, he wasn't looking to take a big-time, full-time position, but wasn't dead yet either. So this was the perfect business model for him because everything was project-based. So he could say yes or he could say no. And it was fulfilling a need that for a lot of companies. And I think it actually turned out to be a very contemporary way of doing businesses. A lot of companies outsource really valuable roles today and parts of their company. So I think it was, when I say, Deb, when he came to me and it was just, I don't think I've ever taken on work with a client where I had nothing to go on except a gut instinct. Like, I felt good about him, but he came to me with nothing. He's like, I don't know what I'm going to do, what I'm going to make of my future. I'm not dead yet. So we dropped into that.
Hence the drop exactly. in CEO. So, you know, there's a gem in there, of course, is that, you know, we're often challenged in our work being faced with a completely new, unfamiliar situation and experiencing such doubt. But what you just shared with us is that it was a blank slate, a blank canvas, and embrace it. And trusting that somewhere between the two of you, you seeing him for what he wanted to do and him being open to the possibilities, he landed in a fantastic spot.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly it.
So have inspired me, and just thank you for all the great content and work that you've done through podcasting, your book, and, you know, quite a bit of public speaking. But at some point along the line, I'm curious about who or what has inspired you, because obviously you're doing amazing work, but was there ever a single person, group of people, or an event that has inspired you for what you're doing now?
I've had some great coaches that have inspired. I'd say my coaches the people I've hired have kept me in a productive path more than inspired me, I guess. Honestly, you've inspired me as well. And I will say that. I mean, the feedback I get from other people inspires me. Like, to me, nothing encourages us to keep going than to realizing that we're actually being seen and heard, right? That what we're doing makes a difference. So, you know, when you've made comments on LinkedIn and such to the podcast, that is inspiring. But I think on a more global answer to your question is I'm a huge fan of what I will refer to as a business philosopher, Jim Rohn. It's Rohn. And one of the greatest gifts in my life just happened recently when I was working with my editor trying to hash out the details of my next book, because I had two, even three concepts for the next book. I kind of narrowed it down to two that were quite different than one another, but one that was resonating more in my heart and the other, which probably made a little bit more strategic sense career-wise. And she listened carefully and she came back to me and said, you know, I don't think we should be worrying about your next book being the next big hit. I think you are going to, I say this with some humbleness, she goes, I think you're going to go down in history as one of our great business philosophers. And that may take several books. She says, but I think you just need to be true to who you are. Because I was leaning towards doing a book that I think would be a bigger seller. Like it was very specific on the topic, but my heart wasn't really in it, to be honest with you. And when she said that to me, that has inspired me so much, because I've always upheld Jim Rohn as a business philosopher. And if I could even imagine and dream about leaving that kind of a legacy behind, that inspires me. And I'll leave you with the quote of Jim Rohn's that has is by far my favorite quote. And his quote is, our level of success rarely exceeds our level of personal development. And I don't know there are truer words ever spoken that I could believe in more. Because everything in my life has been that way. Everything for myself and everything I encourage my clients to do. It's like, we have to develop ourselves personally in order to raise the ceiling of what success can come to us. But it's not the other way around. We can't just keep pounding away, hustling and working hard and think we're going to get to success. We have to work from underneath to lift the ceiling. And as that ceiling rises, the success that we're worthy of comes to fill it up again, and then we raise it again. And I think it has to come from the inside.
So on that note, beautiful words. And I have nothing more to add. This has been an amazing conversation, Jeffrey. And I know the listeners will want to learn more about you and connect with you. So if they do want to reach out to you, what's the best way for them to connect with you?
Sure. JeffreySchaw.com will lead you everywhere to the podcast, all my social media. I do love to interact on social media. So by all means, feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn or Facebook, Instagram, wherever you find me. So that's JeffreySchaw.com.
Jeffrey, this has been a fantastic conversation. I am excited that you gave me the time to have it with you. I've learned so much, and I know our listeners will learn so much as well. Thank you so much, Jeffrey.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Drop-In CEO podcast. I hope you are inspired by our conversation and can apply what you heard to your business or career goals. For more information about our consulting or coaching services, please visit my website at dropinceo.com or visit our Drop-In CEO Facebook group to continue the conversation. Now go out, lead, inspire, and achieve your goals.